Hello and welcome everyone. In today's show, which is episode 12, myself and Gregor are talking to Mike Pfeiffer. But firstly, let's catch up on what we've been up to this week. So Gregor, what have you been up to this week?
So work-wise, this week I've been busy looking into data factory pipelines and Synapse. I've also been doing some design documents for some customers. Also setting up YAML pipelines and Azure DevOps for AKS customers. I've also been studying for the DP200 exam as of last week. I passed the DP201. Yeah, I've been busy studying for that. So Azure Synapse, Data Factory, Azure Storage, Azure Data Lake Storage, all that kind of good stuff. What about you, Richard? What have you been up to?
So work-wise, again, as always, more AKS. The more I delve into it, the more exciting it gets. This time I was like linking in DNS zones, VPNs and stuff like that, private endpoints, all that kind of fun stuff, looking at ways to manage it using different tenants and stuff like that. So trying to figure out how to do that, giving some feedback to Microsoft where needed. I've also started studying for the certified Kubernetes administrator exam, which is quite fun. I've got about 7% through a course on Udemy at the moment, which is good. Hopefully I can crack that out and maybe try and take the exam in January, February time, but we'll see. All depends on time.
Sounds good. Good luck with that. So today we're joined by Mike Pfeiffer. Mike is an entrepreneur, advisor, mentor for people working with cloud native technologies, and Mike lives in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to the show, Mike. How are you getting on today?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, you guys. Excited to be here.
So Mike, let's get straight into it. Can you give us a brief sort of intro into your career?
Sure. Yeah, I've had a long career. I started in the late 90s and, I started the help desk basically working at America Online. So if you guys remember AOL.
Oh, yeah. I've still got
dial-up internet. Yeah. So, yeah, right. The whole dial-up modem and getting on the internet and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of started there in sales, and then I also got hooked up at like Gateway Computers, like the cow boxes back in the day. And that's kind of how I got into it. I got into help desk, and then I realized that, the internet was going to change everything, and I doubled down on it, and I got obsessed with computers. And, over the last couple decades, I went from working in a help desk to being an IT consultant, spent a lot of time doing Microsoft Enterprise projects over the years, Active Directory and Exchange and all kinds of crazy stuff flying all over the place. So it's been interesting. I've spent time as a field person. I've spent time as a developer. I worked for a couple of years as a .NET developer. And, for the last decade or so, spent time at Microsoft, Amazon Web Services. And today I'm running cloudskills.io when we're doing a bunch of training and stuff like that. So it's been a long career. I've done a little bit of everything over the last 20 years. So it's been fun. And I've always enjoyed the variety of just being able to try new things. So
yeah, I quite like the fact that you've done lots of different things. It's quite good to change up every now and again.
Yeah, I need the variety, man. After a while, it's just kind of like, all right, what's the next thing? So I'm a big junkie when it comes to learning.
So you've worked at Amazon and Microsoft. Tell us a bit about your roles there, and did you enjoy working at both?
It was definitely eye-opening. I think for me, I was always kind of like wondering, like, what's behind the curtain? What is really going on back there, kind of thing? And but I learned so much. So when I went to Microsoft, I went and worked in Premier Field Engineering, and I moved to San Francisco, actually, to work in the Bay Area. And some of my customers were like some of the biggest customers that Microsoft had, like Cisco and all these big enterprises. So that was pretty cool. And the thing with that, though, was like, I was in a role where if there was a problem, you had to drop everything and like go fly out there and take care of it. So I had some really interesting experiences where, it'd be like a Friday night and all of a sudden the phone rings like, hey, we need you to go over here. And it's like you got to swoop in and save the day somewhere over the weekend. So that's an awesome job, but it's also, can be pretty exhausting. Yeah. And so anyways, when I was working there, this was probably about 2012. And then I realized that, man, Amazon Web Services is dominating. And Microsoft was working on Azure at that early stage. It was still not, a huge focus yet. And I was trying to like maybe decide, hey, maybe I'll switch over to an Azure team, you know, and but then an opportunity came up at AWS. And so I left Microsoft, went over to AWS. I was a cloud solutions architect on the AWS Quick Start team, which was a brand new team at the time. So you know how we have like Azure Quick Start templates,
yeah,
ARM templates and all that kind of stuff. So I was on the team at AWS that did that with their CloudFormation templates. And it was pretty cool because, you know, it was all infrastructure as code and a bunch of, you know, DevOps type stuff. But this is way back in 2013, 2014. So it was like really early days. That's cool. That was fun to see kind of like, how do we build this team? How do we get people to use the platform? How do we educate? How do we automate? And so there's a lot of learning over the over those few years. And it was pretty cool. So that's kind of like what I did there. And then I left AWS at 2016. And I've been consulting and training ever since. And it's been a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome. Such a being able to see both sides and that must definitely like be awesome.
It was eye opening. When I was at Microsoft, Steve Ballmer was the CEO. So the culture of the company was a lot different, right?
Yeah.
And it was also during the time where the Windows Phone came out, and then that didn't really go very well, right? So it's kind of like I was there in that whole time frame. And then going over to Amazon, I think probably the biggest thing for me, and I think Microsoft is, you know, they've shifted their culture. It's very similar to how Amazon operates. But that was the biggest eye-opening thing, was seeing people actually live the culture, especially at Amazon, and how that really just drives the business forward. So anybody that's ever tried to apply at those places, you know, they really these days are looking for that culture fit in addition to the tech skills. They want to know that, hey, you're going to be, you know, somebody that it's easy to work with.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So earlier you mentioned cloudskills.io. Can you sort of elaborate on that a bit more so people who haven't heard of it, you know, can find out about it, go and explore it?
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. So when I started that company, you know, I started consulting when I left AWS in 2016. And really what I was doing is I was just going to work, do workshops for, you know, small teams. I would go in there and maybe I would do some hands-on work, but I found that the repeating pattern was they just wanted me to come in, help them understand what was going on and get them started. And so over the last couple of years, it's really gone from being consulting to training only. And so at this point, you know, we're different than the other platforms in the sense that we're really more live first. So we do live training and then we put our recordings in a portal where subscribers can go and watch those on demand. But it's really more about, you know, live experience, interacting with other people. So we have a community with, you know, hundreds of people all over the globe. And we do live events, a lot of certification focused type of workshops. And up to this point last year, it's like all been Azure. And next year we're adding AWS and Google Cloud. And we're still going to map to, you know, the training, the certifications. But we're probably going to do some different stuff next year, more project focused type of curriculum. So it's a little bit more, you know, it's not as abstract. I think that's the thing that I've been struggling with over the last year or so. It's like, how do I explain all this stuff to somebody and get it to click? Like, when am I using this? You know what I mean? It's like the fire hose of information coming to all of us has been gnarly, right? So it's kind of, I'm trying to figure out how do we make that easier. But that's what we're all about over at CloudSkills. So super active community. To be honest, like the community is the best part. And I'm blown away every day by people sharing what they're working on in Slack and helping each other out. That's been the coolest thing, is to see kind of the community blossom.
Would you say that's the favorite part of what you're doing, eh?
Yeah, it is. You know, because after 20 years of being in tech, you kind of get into that thing where it's like, why am I doing this anymore? Like, I already figured out the patterns, right? So for me, like what's kept me going, especially the last couple of years, is, you know, helping people and focusing more on some of those things, you know, because like I kind of did the stuff in my career that I wanted to do. Now I need a, you know, to be perfectly honest, a stronger reason to keep going. It's like, you know, you can only get so many certifications before you're like, all right, well, what's next, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, the community stuff has actually been a big inspiration. And I know you guys do an awesome job on that. So I just wanted to take a second to recognize the work that I've seen you guys do over the last couple of years, because you guys have done a ton of awesome work in the Azure community. So
I do it like you because I enjoy it. And I think I'm at the sort of same point in life as you. You've kind of done, right. Done quite a lot of things, and it's good to just help people get started. That's kind of what I've found.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard, right? When you're in the field and it's like going to customers all the time and working nights and weekends, and you know, all of us have to do that at some point in a technical career. But I think there's also, you know, seasons of a career, right? And so you can have different times where you're doing that stuff and different times where you're doing maybe more leadership, you know, teaching and contributing and stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. So I think everybody gets a, you know, can have an opportunity to do that in their career.
I like that. Good advice. Yeah.
So talking about sort of contributing to the community, you've written a few books. Could you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, so I got a book coming out. Actually, we have a book coming out. There's an EZ 303 book that we just wrote for Microsoft Press that's coming out right before Christmas. It should be out like the week of Christmas, and you get pre-ordered on Amazon right now. We did the EZ 300 book the year before that for Microsoft Press. And before that, I had written books on PowerShell for like Exchange and stuff like that. So the book writing process for me has been, the first book I ever wrote was a major game changer for my career. When I went to work at Microsoft and I went to work at Amazon, that just, I think that showed my passion for, you know, going outside the day job to do stuff. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find that. And so that really helped me. And I got to be honest, I like rode the top of the wave of that first book for a really long time. I like used the, you know, all of the, I guess you could say like brand equity you could get out of that. Right. Or like really trying to use it as a thing to propel yourself. But, it's hard work. And the thing that if I was going to do a book again, I would never do a book where they needed you to use Word templates. Cause, you know, that makes me want to rip my hair out, but I don't have any hair. So, but like what some of the people in the community are doing are like writing books in Markdown and using forms like LeanPub and stuff like that. That seems like the way to go, because this last round is, it's fun and tons of people are going to read the EZ 303 book, but man, it's, you guys know how hard it is to keep up with the pace of innovation and creating content. It's just, it's hard to keep up.
Would you recommend someone writing a book if they've never did it, or is it too much work, do you think?
You know, it's a really good question. And I think that we're going to see the publishing industry evolve a little bit. If you take a look at like Manning Publications and what they're doing, they're still doing books, of course, but they're adding all kinds of different things like, you know, hands-on labs and different stuff like that. And so I think that just the nature of the way that tech kind of innovates and moves, that they're going to have to do something differently to where we could release updates faster. Yeah. So I think from a personal perspective of creating something like that, it's still a huge benefit to your career. But I would be strategic about getting involved in that kind of a deal, because it will put a lot of pressure on you. And so there's kind of like two things, right? Getting a book deal and actually working with a publisher, which really isn't that hard in tech if you're willing to put the work in. They need people, right? So there's that side of it. It's like, man, you got this deadline and it's really pushing you and it gets stressful. But the other side of that is self-published, right? There's less pressure, but there's also an easier out of, well, maybe just do that chapter next week, right? So it's kind of like, there's two sides of it. But I think from a resume perspective, it's definitely a nice thing to have. So I would say write a book or author a course, an online course, especially like Pluralsight or something like that. But I do believe that like getting in the game of creating and building your own version of stuff and expressing and being able to explain to people is a game changer for the career. So yeah, in a roundabout way, I would say yes, it's still totally worth it.
I keep thinking about doing it, but like you say, everything changes so much. So it's like, we'll have to keep updating it and maybe self-publish will be better. But then you got to, like you said, motivate yourself. It's just a,
My worry is by the time the book comes out, it's maybe a little bit out of date. That's my concern. I'm having to keep it up to date.
Yeah. Maybe like a short, maybe that's the way to go, is like write a lot of short books that combine together, maybe, you know, address a cert, but alone it's okay. And then you could just focus on writing 100 pages or something. I don't know. But there's, I guess what I'm saying, there's no way I'm going to be able to, even the EZ 303 book, we had like four authors, and even that was a little bit too much. So next year I'm not going to be writing any books personally, but it's definitely served me in my career massively. So total game changer.
So I'm guessing it also probably helped you become an MVP. So could you tell us a bit about your experience of being an MVP and what you did to get the award?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And so I've been an MVP kind of a couple different times. I won the award the first time in 2011. That was, and I think the reason I won it was because of two things. That was the year I wrote my first book, and I was the sole author of that, and that almost killed me. But like, you know, it really helped me out in my ability to create content and stuff like that. So I learned a lot in that experience, but I also ran a user group. So we had, I co-led a user group here in Phoenix. It was a PowerShell user group. And my book was kind of like PowerShell for Exchange Server back then. So that was what I think mainly helped me win the first award. And then I was an MVP for 2 years, and then I went to work at Microsoft. And when you work at Microsoft as a full-time employee, you can't be an MVP. So I had to let go of it. And then, you know, eventually after I left AWS and came back, after a couple of years, I won the award again. And that was really just for doing talks, meetups, and doing Pluralsight courses, and doing live events, blogging, and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a worthwhile pursuit, but I think it's the pursuit what matters, not the, you know, the winning of the award, but like the activity that you have to do in order to win it, you know. That's the payoff, because it's a win-win. You win, and then the audience, the community wins, you know.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. So you mentioned that writing a book nearly killed you. Have you ever personally suffered from burnout? Have you ever just like can't do anymore?
Oh, burnout. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I was just telling people this the other day. It was like 2020 has been the year of me finally trying to figure out how to not burn out, because I figured out most everything else in my personal habits and productivity and stuff. It's like I figured out how to get a lot done. I figured out how to like get past procrastination and stuff like that. But the one thing, the last piece is like that I've been trying to figure out is how do I stop burning out? And so 2020 has been like an experiment in figuring that out for me. It's hard, man, because with all this data coming at us, like the social stuff and pace of innovation in tech, I would forget to like unplug, you know, and take a rest. And then it's like, I'm doing okay for a few weeks, and then boom, out of nowhere, you know, just kind of hits you. And so I've had to learn how to like take my foot off the gas and be like, all right, I'm going to have like a very focused part of my day where I do my best work. And then I have to recover. I have to like take my foot off the gas. I got to check out. And it's hard because sometimes I get on a roll and I don't want to stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I sometimes from Monday to Friday forget to go outside.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that all matters, you know? So I think for me, what's been is just kind of focusing and being okay with not being online 24/7. And one of the things this year that really like, really resonated with me was that Netflix documentary on, I forget the name of it. It was something about like the social media platforms and how people are kind of habitually kind of addicted in a way. And I think it was called The Social Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And so that really made me more conscious of like how much screen time was I actually chewing up. And then I realized, holy crap, it's a lot. You know what I mean? So yeah. I've been trying to like balance that much better, you know, so I can long term continue to do what I do, but in the short term, not get burned out unexpectedly.
Because I think I suffer from it from time to time. Like yourself, I'm all right. And then all of a sudden it just comes out of nowhere and you're like, whoa, you need to go and turn the laptop off, just go and turn everyone off.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to do when you're on a roll, but like I'm trying to get more disciplined and being more organized. And it's like have a calendar, like literally have all my stuff mapped out, even have my recovery mapped out. And so what I mean by recovery is like when the day is over, I'll just like completely unplug and I'll do something like maybe jump in a hot tub or do something that completely resets my mind and I just don't think about work. And it's a hard thing to do, man. It really is.
Good advice.
Yeah.
I wish I had a hot tub. I have to go for a walk here in the UK instead. Yeah. It's a lot colder than a hot tub. After work, I just try and go for a walk every night to just clear the head, forget about work, and then maybe I can go back and play with some tech or something later.
Right. But that's so smart.
Yeah. Apart from going in a hot tub, what else do you like to do in your spare time?
Yeah, well, I guess I would say my keystone habit, like the one thing that is kind of like, that helps me do what I do is like, I just like to lift weights. I like to go in there and, you know, I was a football player when I was a kid. So I kind of found that when I was 15, 16 years old, and I've always been big into weightlifting. And, you know, so that for me, that, you know, helps me stay in shape, but it also is a time where I can just kind of like check out. So like you mentioned, Richard, going on walks and stuff, I get some isolation in those times. But it also, you know, it bleeds into everything else I do. It helps me with my energy throughout the day so I could be more productive. You know, so it's kind of like I'm activating my body because that also influences your mind, right? So that's kind of my number one self-care habit.
Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. What's the one thing in Azure at the moment, Mike, that's grabbing your attention? What is there anything in particular that you've got your focus on or anything that's come out or is about to come out that you think this is worth looking at, getting into?
Yeah, I do. I think what Microsoft's doing with their architectural guidance, like well-architected framework and all that kind of stuff, and like landing zones, to me is insanely relevant because the people that I do talk to, I haven't done much consulting this year just because of COVID and mm-hmm. focusing on training. But the people that I'm talking to, you know, the governance conversation is still a lot of people are trying to figure out, like, how do we get things set up right? And so to me, like landing zones and figuring out, you know, how do we do this repeatedly, consistently, doing it in the right way? And I also just think that there's a ton of gold in there that, you know, if somebody was going to dive into it, they would learn mm-hmm. a lot about the architectural patterns. So, so you know, things like Azure policy and really understanding RBAC and just like, what does a whole environment look like? That's something that's captured my attention.
Yeah, we do a lot of workshops for ISVs across Europe, and that's probably the most attended sessions of the governance sessions.
Yeah, yeah, right. It's like the main, it's kind of like a central focus right now because people are still moving in. So yeah, I like that. And that's where I would spend, and I think anybody that's new, I would say, you know, once you understand the fundamentals, that's a great place to focus because you'll learn, you know, the whole stack essentially, like the identity piece and Paul, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on Azure Arc? Because I know you had Thomas on talking about that.
Yeah, that's interesting to see what is going to happen with that. I haven't done much with it personally. It's like it's still evolving, right? But yeah, that is exciting. I mean, I think Microsoft's going to really win on that, all the hybrid work that they've done, you know? Yeah. And so that, and I've been saying this for a couple of years, I really believe that Microsoft's going to do really, really well in the enterprise, and we're already seeing that. So we'll have to see how Arc plays out. Have you guys messed around with it much?
I haven't. Nope. No, I don't yet. No.
Yeah.
You know, just watch Thomas's videos and that's about it.
Yeah, same here. Yep. Yeah, I think so, that's going to evolve quite a bit, right? So
yeah,
we'll see how it goes and probably big updates next year.
Yeah, hopefully at Ignite in person. But you just mentioned all this land and zone governance and Arc is more suited for the enterprise. Do you think that Microsoft have forgotten about the smaller companies or do you think they're still sort of looking after those a bit, but just not with these landing zones and governance and stuff? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that they're trying to do more, especially in the startup community. You know, they have teams and people that are dedicated to that. But yeah, I mean, mid-sized businesses have traditionally kind of struggled a little bit with these enterprise products. Way back in the day, I used to support small companies in my early consulting days, and they would do like small business server. I don't know if you guys ever had to deal with that, but it's like install everything on one machine and it's like totally running like crap. Yeah. So I think that those types of companies are going to struggle with cloud, you know, and so it's going to be on us as like community people and consultants and people. That's a gap where, you know, somebody out there could close that one, you know, as a contributor some way, either through your free content or as a paid opportunity. There's a lot of things popping up. Like, so for example, you know, AWS has that thing where I forget the name of the service, but they'll connect you with a consultant. So it's kind of like a marketplace. And I know some other guys that are working on a platform. It's called Cloud Gurus Direct. So cloudgurus.direct. And it's basically just a marketplace where guys like us, girls like, you know, anybody in the community go sign up, create a profile, list all your certifications. And then people that need cloud help can go to that platform and then hire people for one-off projects and stuff like that.
That's a good
idea. I think for like the small companies, I think that'll matter because not everybody's going to need, you know, to spend $100K on a project. They might just need you to do 4 hours of something, you know? And so I think Microsoft's got to focus on the low hanging fruit with the enterprise. I think those continue to like move a little bit forward more with startups. AWS is really good with startups. But yeah, I think they'll get there eventually, but I still think that it's a struggle for a smaller business at this point.
So Mike, you're doing a lot of live training and a lot of training in general. What's your favorite course to for you to give, and what's been the most popular course that you've done?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think the biggest one we had last year in 2020 was probably the AZ-104, so Azure Administrator. But Azure Administrator and the architect stuff, I've been teaching Azure architecture for a really long time. Actually, since 2016, I started teaching content that was mapping to, there was an old exam before the current series of exams. So I was teaching to that and then these current ones. So the architecture stuff's fun for me because it really covers a broad set of content, you know. There's a little bit of infrastructure stuff, developer concepts, you know. So I like that. But I also like I was saying before, kind of like project focused stuff. So I've done a couple courses at Pluralsight. I did an AWS one once that was really project focused. I'd like to get back to that because just seeing, you know, a practical example of why would I use all this stuff together, you know? Yeah. So I like teaching that way too.
Yeah. It's important to know how the things work together as well.
Yeah. Cause it kind of gets boring of just being like, hey, here's everything you need to know about app service. And you're like, well, when would I ever use half of these things? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think the training guides are totally missing. This is how you get it to production. You know, they teach you the basics and that's it. And then there's this massive black hole of how to actually get it ready for production use. And no one is covering it. And
that's true.
I think they need to.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what we have to do as an industry of like trainers and educators in the community is close that gap, because you're absolutely right. Everything right now is kind of just like surface level, you know. Even the 300, 400 content, it's just like a blast of info. Just like, oh my God. Yeah, so I totally agree with that. And it's honestly because most people haven't figured it out yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's different at every company right now. We need to like have patterns that people could just go off and run with.
You mentioned 104. I actually used your course for the 104, and that was the only course I used for the 104, and I managed to pass. So thanks for that.
Oh, nice.
Most helpful.
And I also got to give some credit to Tim Warner because he delivers those with being, you know, 50% usually. So all the Azure stuff, Tim Warner has usually been in there with us. So yeah, this year AZ-104 and AZ-300 stuff or 301, that type of stuff. And then the year before that, we did a PowerShell one. That was really fun. We had hundreds of people on Zoom. And this was way before, like, you know, the pandemic and stuff like that. And I wasn't sure. I'd never really used Zoom before. It's like, is this going to work? But we had like 300 people on. It was really fun.
Wow. That sounds awesome.
That was the biggest one we've ever had. For some reason, that one just, it was like, it went viral. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, usually we've got, you know, 50 or 100 people on a live call for a training usually. And so part of the fun of it, you know, is people interacting in the chat and stuff. Yeah. We have a pretty vibrant and it seems to happen. We encourage, you know, that aspect of like social, you know, engagement, all that kind of stuff, but it's not like we have to do anything to make it. It just seems to happen. And it's always fun because that includes, that adds a nice additional perspective to the training. So more reality, like Richard was saying, like more truth, like not a canned demo. Like, let's talk about what really happens, you know?
I think it would be good to get the full picture of what you're doing and why. As you said, with the project, seems like a really good idea. I like that idea myself.
Yeah. And I think anybody, I keep thinking about that, you know, it's like, but I think anybody could find a way to do that kind of content. Right. And
I mean, there's a guy called Peter Detender who's on our things quite regular, and he's built some GitHub labs, and I quite like working through the labs. So he'll take a two-tier application and he'll move it to like Kubernetes, but he'll do it in each step and explain why he's doing it. And I really like that kind of thing. It's really
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I've seen him around the community. I've seen him putting out stuff. That's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Got some good stuff. I'll send you a wee link after this. So we met at Ignite 2019. What is your highlight from this year's Ignite?
This year's Ignite? Oh, man, I got to confess. I didn't watch this year's Ignite yet. So
none of us have.
No, okay.
We'll skip that question.
Yeah, I got so many videos I need to watch, man. Like, my watch list is ridiculously long.
Yeah, same. There's a few I need to watch from Ignite. Not watched yet. What's your favorite conference and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, my opinion has changed over the last couple of years, I guess. Reinvent, I used to go to Reinvent back in the old days, and I used to speak at that conference. That's the AWS one. And the thing that's cool about that one is it's just insanely massive. And now, you know, once it goes back to being live again, if you ever go, you'll notice, it's because they take over the entire Vegas Strip. So you get a very clear understanding of, geez, how many people are actually using AWS? It's mind-boggling, right? It's like, so 6-7 years ago when I worked there, it would just be like, all right, they take over the Bellagio and whatever, you know. Now it's like all these casinos on the Strip, they take over. So I like that one just because it's so big and there's just a ton of content. But I do like Ignite as well. So, I mean, those two for me are my favorite. I used to go to some smaller shows the last couple of years. Some of those ones aren't around anymore. And, that was kind of a bummer about COVID. Like, O'Reilly Media is a company that I've done a lot of work with in the past, like training for. I was supposed to speak at a bunch of O'Reilly conferences this year. And unfortunately that got, you know, the whole training or that whole division of their company got wiped out. So there were some ones in there, like, some good O'Reilly conferences in there and stuff like that. But yeah, I'd say at this point, you know, Ignite, AWS reInvent are probably the go-to for me. And we'll have to see like what happens with Google. And I know they have one, but I haven't done much Google stuff. I'm planning in 2021 to do some more Google Cloud.
So they just had the AWS reInvent online like last month or earlier this month. Did you watch any of that or did you skip it like Ignite?
Yeah, I skipped it, but I did kind of watch the updates come in. And it's interesting right now because Microsoft is definitely, in my opinion, not only caught up in a lot of ways, but also past AWS in a lot of ways. And 4 years ago, I did not have that perspective. It was much different. You know, the customers that I was dealing with weren't doing anything production-wise in Azure, and they were just like exploring. And now it's very different, right? People are actually doing stuff in Azure and doing production stuff. Microsoft has moved past AWS in many ways. So for example, one of the things that they announced at reInvent was, oh, okay, now you can package your app as a container image, run it in AWS Lambda, which is the serverless thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we've had that in Azure Functions for a long time. So it's like, you know, there's places now where Microsoft's ahead in different ways. And so yeah, I was kind of watching the updates and it seems like Amazon is just, you know, continuing to do what they do, which is double down on machine learning and AI. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens over there. But Microsoft, to my, you know, and I was just looking at this yesterday, I still think that, you know, some of their user interfaces, many of their user interfaces are better. And so AWS has a lot of work to do to kind of close the management tools gap, right? I mean, look at Visual Studio Code and all this awesome tooling we have. AWS isn't really doing that. You know what I mean? It's like they're trying to do some stuff, but that's where Microsoft's beating them, right? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think, you know, 2021 is definitely the year of all three platforms like AWS, GCP, Azure. You know, they're legit for anybody to deploy for production. And there's no longer, oh, AWS is like the go-to and the other ones are still behind. And I think we're coming out of that, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think we've got a couple more questions for you. It's sort of a bit off tech, which is good. So there's just like fun ones, really. So the first one is, what's your favorite place in the whole world that you've been that someone might not have heard of?
Ooh.
No pressure.
Favorite place that I've been that somebody might not have heard of?
I might not even not heard of. Just what's your favorite place? Let's go with that.
Make it a bit easier.
Yeah. Well, I love to travel out of the country and I love to go to Amsterdam. We've been over there several times. So for me, as soon as I can travel out of the country, I'm going to Amsterdam. I'm going to fly there and hang out for a couple of days.
I'm laughing because we've kind of joined a Dutch company, myself and Richard, and he's never even been.
Yeah, so that's one of my favorite places in the world. And then in terms of the United States, I live in Arizona, so I'm like out in the middle of the desert. way out here in the West Coast United States. And so we do like to go up to Sedona. I'm actually going up there tomorrow for the weekend, which is just a really beautiful place and very peaceful. A lot of red rocks, used to be under the ocean, you know, long time ago. And so awesome place, amazing pictures. So if you ever want some inspiration, you know, go on Google Images and look up Sedona, Arizona. It's amazing, really beautiful.
Yeah. What's the main reason why you like Amsterdam, just out of interest?
You know, there's a lot of reasons, but I think the European culture really maps up to like the stuff that we like, me and my wife. We've noticed that, like food, like just little things, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of little things about that city that I wish were in the US, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like so many minor things that just all stack up to be amazing. Mm-hmm. But I also like kind of like, you know, it's laid back. People are open-minded. People have like a stronger sense of community in that city, mm-hmm. and kind of unity. It's like, so that's kind of why it's one of my favorite places.
Cool. Right. Okay. We've got one last question. So if you could pick someone that you know who isn't well-known and would be good to have on a podcast, who would you choose and why? And they don't need to be technical, just someone interesting that you've come across.
So somebody that's been on my podcast that you guys
No, interview? just in general.
Or somebody I think you guys should interview?
Yeah, somebody we should interview.
That's a great question. So let's see. There's so many options. I think you guys, if we're really going to go with this one, we should go big. So how about Satya Nadella?
No, yes, please.
It'd be a hard pass to get, right? Yeah. How about Scott Hanselman would be fun. Get Hanselman on there. Kelsey Hightower.
Kelsey's awesome.
Yeah. For anybody that doesn't know Kelsey, Google. Yeah, over at Google. He's a fun guy because, you know, he's opinionated and he's got a lot of fun ideas to share about Kubernetes. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many people too. Also, I would say anybody that's just doing projects in the field that has some perspective of like, how did it go? You know, like, what was your experience and what was the pain and what can you say, like painful points can we watch out for? Honestly, anybody that's like in the game, it would be worthwhile, I think.
So I think that's pretty much all we got time for today. A huge big thanks for coming on the show, Mike. It's been awesome chatting with you. So I hope everyone else enjoyed the show and we look forward to bringing you more content just like this.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Take care.